Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Diego Arambula from the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. As Vice President of Educational Transformation, Diego and the team he leads works to build ambitious, actionable strategies to advance the foundation's mission, which is to transform education so that every student has the opportunity to live a healthy, dignified, fulfilling life. We're so grateful to talk to him today. Diego, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you all about the work that we're doing here at the Carnegie Foundation and the important work that you all have been pushing for.
Diego, we are so glad to have you here. And we record in the studios of SLB Radio, which is located in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And let's just say that we Pittsburghers know the Carnegie name well. In fact, we know how to pronounce it. It's Carnegie, not Carnegie. The legacy of Andrew Carnegie is very much with us still today, thanks to museums and libraries, universities, even towns that bear his name. So to start, Diego, can you tell us about the Carnegie Foundation and its connection to Andrew Carnegie? Why did he found it, and how has the work evolved over the years?
When this work began more than 100 years ago, the core of it has always been true, that we wanted to center amazing educators and really ensure that the work that they were doing could magnify and impact students across this country. One of the very first things that the Carnegie Foundation did upon its launch was launch the Carnegie Unit, an attempt to help standardize schools to ensure that every student had access to a great education and a chance to continue their education beyond high school. That work was deeply needed when it was created, provided huge equitable access to students across this country, many of whom were moving into cities for the first time. And yet, as with so many things that are 120 years old now, is ripe for revisiting and considering how do we take that important legacy and bring it into the 21st century.
Diego, going back to that original conception of the Carnegie Unit, I think a lot of our listeners, if they've been in education a while, they've heard that term. But if they're anything like me, they probably would have trouble defining it. So what is a Carnegie Unit? What does it measure? What does a Carnegie Unit look like?
I'll help answer that by describing what a unit itself is and then in what ways it shows up. Since most of my time has been in education, how we tend to think about it and see it in practice in the world. The core function of the original unit was to define learning. And so it defined the way to know that someone has learned a subject is to have 180 hours, 180 days, roughly an hour at a time, of learning attached to a set of standards taught by a teacher who was well-versed in that particular subject. That's how we defined learning. It was a measure of time that equated to learning. What that has led to today is bell schedules, which are across this country, that are typically somewhere in the 52 to 57 minute range over about 180 days a year, taught by a teacher who is credentialed in subjects that are well-defined. Those are all vestiges of the Carnegie Unit. It's how schools get paid. It's how students get assessed. It's how things get measured and captured on a transcript. And at its fundamental core was the idea that time and learning were one and the same. And again, it was a very needed invention and innovation at the time. And today, that conflation of time and learning is holding back so many critical innovations that are better for young people, that communities are desperately calling for. And so we need to find ways to update and move beyond our current understanding of the Carnegie Unit so that we can find new ways forward that are better for young people, that are tied to what the science of learning and development are helping us understand.
So Diego, can you tell us a little bit about what we're learning from the learning sciences that suggests that the Carnegie Unit as originally conceived is no longer sufficient? Why do we need to overhaul the Carnegie Unit, and what might a post-Carnegie Unit actually look like?
On the first side, researchers and learning scientists for decades have been coming to a realization that how young people learn and how young people develop is not tied to sitting in one classroom for one period of time to learn one subject. That might be that certain students need more autonomy and control. Some of the research and learning is that, as any educator can tell you, when you get a class of 30 students, you're most likely to end up with 30 students who are coming in at 30 distinct places. And so how we can find ways to break time in learning is so important on that end. The other bit of research that's been so critical is a better understanding of how young people make sense of the world and how they develop. And so a lot of the research around social and emotional learning, a lot of the research about the fact that actually breaking subjects apart is not how we make sense of big problems and how we engage in the kinds of deep learning that's going to help us make sense of the world and engage meaningfully with the world. All of those are a huge burgeoning research base that's pushing us to reconsider how school is done. Your second question is, so how are folks moving beyond the Carnegie unit? And the answer there is, it's really amazing to see what communities are doing. It's also amazing to see just how strong the Carnegie unit has been as an organizing framework, and it makes it challenging to make some changes. But we have educators across this country who are trying to find innovative ways to move beyond the Carnegie unit. This is everything from educators who are moving towards a more competency-based model, allowing young people to move at their own pace and progression through learning. You see educators who are doing more interdisciplinary and project-based learning, a chance to say that this work can be happening across disciplines and in more project-based environments in ways that are breaking the traditional, you take history here and math over there. We see lots of examples of schools and communities moving towards more work-based learning opportunities, career-connected learning, internships, and finding ways to try and capture and credit that learning. And there are fewer examples of this, but some very powerful examples where experiences in the community themselves are being integrated and tried to be brought back into classrooms and the school so that that learning that's happening is recognized as learning, and the only learning that happens doesn't need to happen from 8 to 3 inside of the school walls.
Diego, you just wonderfully pulled us away from the technicalities of the Carnegie unit to ideas that I would guess speak to educational transformation. That's a phrase that's used at least among those in the field of education, and it's a phrase that can mean so little or it can mean so much. And this is the work that you lead at the Carnegie Foundation. In fact, it's in your job title as Vice President of Educational Transformation. So can you tell us, what exactly are the practices and principles that you think about when you think about educational transformation?
First, I should start by saying I got to choose my title.
Well done.
That's a good one.
Part of the reason I chose it is fully recognizing that educational transformation can mean everything or nothing all at the same time. But the core that I wanted to capture and that we at the Carnegie Foundation want to capture is that our schools were designed to do exactly what they're doing today. And so when we as communities, and I'm a parent myself, when we as parents, when we as community members are looking at our schools and want better, I can hear sometimes folks say, well, our schools are broken. And one, that's incredibly demeaning to our educators who are working so hard every single day to really inspire and do amazing work with young people. But more importantly, it misses the fact that our schools are built to do exactly what they're doing. And so many of the changes that individual educators are making and trying to make inside of their classrooms are hitting up against systemic barriers that we have put into place. And if we want different results at scale, then we need to be willing to consider transformation at scale of the system and not ask individual educators to try and carry that load on their own. And so as we think about educational transformation, it speaks to creating the systemic changes in transformation that will enable educators and school leaders and communities to do what they've been desperately trying to do for decades.
This is Greg Baer. I'm here with my co-host Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Diego Arambula, Vice President of Educational Transformation at the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching.
Diego, you mentioned a moment ago the incredibly hard work of educators, and that's something that you know from experience. It's something that you bring yourself to this work. Having spent more than a decade working for Summit Public Schools, which is a charter network in California and Washington State, where you first were a social studies teacher, then a principal, and then eventually you became the network's chief growth and innovation officer. And I'm curious, you know, how has your journey informed the work you're doing today? What is it about your own experience as an educator at so many different levels that brought you to this place of trying to advance transformational change for every student?
It's important to know that when I first got into teaching, I got into schools because I knew it was a way to create positive change in the world. And I had loved my own experience in school. And so when I got into schools, I thought that I was going to be in a place where I could just step into a classroom and work with students and help it work directly for them in all the ways that it had worked for me. And what I found is that Summit was doing tremendous work to try and rebuild the system to allow us to do exactly that, to enable teachers to really meet every student where they were and to prepare them to thrive when they left high school. And yet, even with that amazing work that was happening at Summit Public Schools, it was still incredibly challenging at the classroom level to truly support every student to thrive when they left high school. And that then led me to leave the classroom and move into a principal's role to say, well, gosh, if I can't do this at the individual classroom level, maybe I can do it at the school leadership level. In that seat, over a couple of years, I ran into some of the same headwinds. And so then I moved into the network to support our overall innovation. And at each one of those steps, I realized, and I didn't have the language at the time of the Carnegie unit, but I knew that there were barriers that made it very challenging for us to enable our teachers to do what they knew how to do best in meeting the needs of all of our young people that we were serving. Each one of those steps over a decade plus helped me see that there is more work that we need to do to unlock and untap this untapped potential in educators that's then going to help us unlock potential in young people across this country.
Diego, your passion as an educator and as a parent to transform education extends beyond K-12 education into higher education. You are a trustee for the California State University System, the largest and most diverse post-secondary system in America. So how are you making sense of things in higher education? What are you bringing to your leadership for the California State University System?
I care deeply about my hometown of Fresno, California. I care deeply about my home state of California. But more than anything, I care very deeply about the role that public education plays in a functioning and strong democracy. It's with that love for my hometown, love for my state, and love for the country we live in and the role that public education plays in that, that when the opportunity to join the California State University Board of Trustees was presented, I jumped at it. I've learned a tremendous amount about the opportunities and challenges in higher education. And what I've also learned is that many of those same challenges mirror what we're seeing in K-12 education. And so we're seeing similar challenges where what we understand about the learning science is made more difficult by some of the constraints of the Carnegie unit, which extends into higher education. We're seeing that some of the same questions about thriving, how to meet students where they are and prepare them to thrive when they leave, exist. And we're seeing wonderful educators who are challenged and constrained by choices that we have made at a systematic level. The example I would give that is true in high schools, but I think is even more true in universities, is there is so much learning to be gained by engaging in the workplace through internships and actual work-based learning opportunities. And yet, so much of the learning that we capture still happens on a college campus. And that if we could find more ways to identify where learning could happen and extend opportunities to learn, I think we could extend our opportunities that a college education provides to so many more students and do so in ways that work for students themselves, work for our colleges, and work for our local communities.
Diego, it seems that when we transform our schools, whether those schools are our K-12 schools or state university systems, we inevitably also need to transform then how we measure success. And so many of the tools that we've relied on for that, things like report cards or GPAs, you know, they're not designed to evaluate the skills and the mindsets and the dispositions that we know are so important. And so we're curious, you know, are there new tools that we need to develop to measure student success? Success in the internships you just mentioned, or in apprenticeships, or in all the other places where kids learning, recognizing that that learning happens everywhere?
We absolutely need to rethink how we measure success. I want to be clear when I say that, though, that we must continue to measure academic mastery as a portion of that. Young people still need to be able to read well, to write well, to think quantitatively. There's some content knowledge that we need to do everything else as we move forward. And so we cannot live in an either-or society where moving and adapting new skills means that we're getting rid of old skills. Rather, we need to think in a both-and mentality. Many of those skills that we need to think about adding are so often captured in portraits of a graduate, in graduate profiles. Different communities and systems call them different things. Toward that end, we at the Carnegie Foundation have joined with ETS to create reliable and valid assessments that are captured by the learning science and by portraits of a graduate from across the country, and pilot these assessments so that districts everywhere can incorporate reliable and valid ways to assess the other kinds of learning that we all know matter, both for a young person's success in the world, in the workplace, in college, but also because these are the things that, as thriving individuals, we want to make sure that we can think critically, that we can communicate well, that we can collaborate. And so finding ways that we can assess those things in reliable ways and in valid ways so that colleges and workplaces can trust the data that they're seeing is important. And that's why we at Carnegie have undertaken that project with ETS to create those assessments to share with schools across the country.
Diego, we are nearing the end of our time, but before we go, we want to play a little Diego Arambula trivia and help our listeners get to know you and your work a little bit better. Is that okay?
Of course.
All right, we're just going to ask you a couple of rapid-fire questions. You just answer with the first thing that comes to mind. First question, the thing you miss most from your time in the classroom?
Kids are tremendous amounts of fun, and I really miss being with high school students every single day. They are just a blast.
A teacher who shaped you and how?
Miss G was my high school debate coach. I used to ditch class a lot in high school. I'm sorry to my high school principal. And I would ditch and go sit in Miss G's class because she gave us tremendous amounts of autonomy and treated us like young adults rather than treating us like old kids.
Diego, there's no question that education and educational transformation brings you joy. What else in your life brings you joy?
I have two daughters, Camila and Lola, who are 14 and 12, and they are just tremendous amounts of fun. And between those two and my wife, we have a lot of fun here in our house.
I love that, especially as a fellow girl dad of two daughters. Good answer, Diego.
I saw the Greg smile as soon as you said that.
Diego, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I would encourage parents to work directly with their own kids and trying to find ways to challenge them to take more ownership of their own learning and path at a younger age. So that may be engaging your child in what school they're going to go to, in what courses they're going to take, in how they may set a plan for the next period of work, whatever it looks like for you. But I think if we as parents can begin to get young people to begin to see themselves and step more into being adults and making those choices and taking more ownership, it would create lots of pressure for schools to do the same. And it's setting those young people up for more success as they step into eventual adulthood.
We are so grateful to Diego Arambula, Vice President of Educational Transformation at the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.